Welcome to the Black Sparrow Media Internet Broadcast Network.
You're listening to Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a podcast about Linux, open source and amateur radio for everyone. Now here are your hosts, Russ, K5TUX, Cheryl, W5MOO, and Bill, NE4RD.
Well, hello everyone and good evening. This is Bill Stearns, NE4RD, and you're tuned in to the most terrific podcast on the internet, and the episode tonight is 243, and you're probably already realizing something weird here. I normally don't open the show, and there's normally more than one voice here, but tonight we have Russ is traveling, and he said he may be able to pop in, and it looks like he's not popping in. And Cheryl is busy batching it over in Missouri, doing all kinds of fun stuff without Russ. So I'm going to go ahead and run our short topic show for this evening. Our lead topic, of course, is Russ is not here. So there you go. That's all we need to say with that. So we'll go right into the stories here in our amateur radio topics. This topic is from a member here in the chat room. The WeMo Pico APRS transmitter tracker version 3 is released. Jim McKenzie here, VE5EV, aka Photo Jim in the chat room, he reviewed version 2 of the device in September's QST, if you get that magazine. And now version 3 is available, as was mentioned in the article. And from the designer's website, the Pico APRS version 3 is here, and it's about 27% smaller than the version 2. This made the world's smallest APRS transceiver even smaller, and above all, considerably thinner than its predecessor. The board has been redesigned for the most part. The GPS module now also supports GLONASS. This allows greater accuracy in the street canyons. Not sure what a street canyon is, but I'm assuming it's a canyon with a road on it, or possibly downtown where you have the tall buildings. And in forests and valleys, despite smaller dimensions and a lower weight, there is no compromise in the TX-RX performance, and it is the same firmware as the version 2 that is installed. So sounds pretty good. Jim's last little final thought here in his article was that while the device isn't the least expensive APRS device out there, it gives you a lot in an incredibly small package. And that's from the Pico APRS website, and of course, QST. I got the September issue sitting right here in front of me. And check the price over there on HRO, and it runs $229.95. So definitely not a little cheap device, but definitely cool. Something you could clip on a backpack if you had VHF capabilities, meaning you had somewhere that would actually be able to hear you line of sight while you're hiking and stuff like that, where a lot of the front-facing mountains and stuff like that do, this device will work well for you. But if you're going to be back in the bear tooths like I would be, that wouldn't work at all. I guess I'll have to wait for the 30-meter version to come out. So very good. The next topic is the Tokyo Ham Fair 2018 just wrapped up. It's the annual event. This past weekend on August 26th, it's finished. And we're starting to see some videos of the new gear that we know about and some other interesting projects that maybe we haven't quite heard about. I stumbled upon the JI1 ETU channel over there on YouTube where he hit some of the booths. You can see some of the new and current products from vendors like AOR, Linko, Yaesu, ICOM, among others. There has been a few reviews posted online, and they've all seemed pretty positive about the event and the location. There's a mega thread over there on the amateur radio subreddit, and I've linked that hidden in the show notes here. And one new product that I hadn't heard about or seen was the ICOM AI speaker, which appears to be a branded smart speaker, kind of like the Echo or the Dot, that allows you to control your rig. So I'm thinking, I wonder what kind of, is this going to be like a Hey ICOM or Yo ICOM? tune this lid out, or hey, ICOM, what does the dit dit da dit da da dit mean? So who knows? Maybe they'll have all other kinds of interesting things that you can program your ICOM AI box to do. And it looks like they're also opening up the ability to run the Amazon Echo as well against your rig for rig control. So if you're into the smart boxes like that, then take a look at that that new speaker plan, the ICOM AI speaker. All right, the next topic we have here is an article I found that pointed me back to a program called Minds on the Air, MOTA. This is kind of like SOTA. It's another activity program wrapped around getting outdoors and setting up portable station. And I'm not sure if we run across this one in the past. I think we did, but I couldn't find any show notes on it. So I just wanted to kind of mention it anyway. I was kind of brought to the site following a post from Johnny F, WJ0NF, his fifth attempt at activating the Pyramid Group copper mine that was established in 1908, located southeast of Casper, Wyoming. And he says it's about 20 plus miles from the nearest cell phone tower. Minds on the Air isn't a fully developed program yet, but is working hitting a critical mass of interest and activity to expand the program. So I don't think there is any awards or anything else like that right now. Basically, the site has a bunch of links and information links and sources of information on all the mines you could possibly activate and all the registered mines. And it looks like there's a lot of interesting places you can activate, not necessarily active mines, but inactive mines that maybe have been shuttered. And a lot of them are on public land, like BLM land. So, it's a lot of interesting information there about mining and mine resources and mapping and stuff like that. So if this sounds like something you're interested in, like SOTA, POTA, or radar activity, check them out on Minds on the Air. So we'll move over to our open source segment. I don't know what we would talk about here, except for probably the biggest story that's been been out there for the past week and a half or so. Steam Play Beta and Proton. Hands down, this is the biggest news that's flooding the scene right now, and is a sudden release of at least sudden for me to find out about it. The Steam Play Beta that enables Linux and macOS users to play some Windows titles in Steam. Proton, according to the GitHub page, is a tool for use with the Steam client, which allows games, which are exclusive to Windows, to run on Linux and Mac OS operating system, and it uses Wine to facilitate that. Most users will prefer to use Proton provided by Steam, the Steam client itself. The source code is provided to enable advanced users the ability to alter Proton. For example, some users may wish to use a different version of Wine with a particular title. There is a whitelist of titles that run well under the new environment, and that's growing. I believe the list is the last I checked was up to over 1,000 titles, so definitely not a shortage of titles. In here, I linked the Proton GitHub site, also the Reddit thread that talks a little bit more about it. If you want to learn sort of more about the Steam Play and how it works, if you want to get the real beta going on your box and you have a capable video card like I have an NVIDIA GeForce 940MX, which is not the greatest video card in the world, but it seems to run fine on CSGO and stuff like that. You can enable the graphics drivers PPA repository, because I was stuck at version 3.9.0, and I saw several places where people were recommending going to 3.9.6 for performance. So, me, I'll just go ahead and add the PPA. And, your mileage may vary with doings that, PPAs are double-edged operation. It may or may not work out for you, but it has worked out quite well for me. I did notice some sort of weird stuff when I started changing the settings in games away from the default settings or what it auto-detected would work best. So there might be something to that auto detection thing that they already have set up. But I did try running some Windows only titles. I ran BioShock Remastered, which is definitely Windows only. And beyond the very first time I ran it, which it did crash when you land in the water, the second time it came up, it ran flawlessly. and you know, adequate performance. And I've seen a lot of stories on this week of people experimenting with it and trying it out. And you know, it definitely looks like a solution for probably some of these older games that never, ever, ever would ever come to to Linux. You know, I saw one story of Roller Coaster Tycoon 2, which you know, is a title from what, 10 years ago. And there's a, you know, many other ones like Age of Empires and stuff like that. Stuff that, yeah, no one's ever going to write a client for it. You know, yeah, we might get an occasional, somebody might port it or try to port it if you have the stuff. So, yeah, this is a great way to try out some of these other games and, you know, use your Linux system for gaming. So try that out and check it out if you haven't already. Along with this was a story I found about the CPU. And is your CPU on low power mode? With all the interest peaking in the gaming and Linux, some users have noticed their CPUs not quite running to performance standards, as posed by a Reddit user, Respute. He said, hello all, and welcome to new people coming to Linux thanks to Steam Play. I am no expert, and many here could explain this better, but I will try anyway, hoping I do not get it all wrong. On most Linux distros, the CPU is set on a low power mode, and that's as far as I could test. Works fine in intense workloads, but something like games don't quite stress the CPU as much. Therefore, it'll stay. Oh, sorry. Therefore, it stay in a. I'm reading his words. It stay in a lower gigahertz than it should be. So basically, he wrote a script to change the governor setting on the CPU itself. Another thing you can do, which one of the readers, responders put in there, which is what I tried, was installing a package called indicator-cpu-freak. And what this gives you is a, once you reboot or restart your session, you get the ability to change the actual setting of your processor, depending upon which processor you have. Mine, when I click it, I get the option of either going to power save mode, which is what it generally is sitting in, or performance mode. So I did set it to performance mode. I didn't really notice much difference, but still, it's just kind of one more tweak that that might interest you if you get into doing the games on Linux. So those notes will be in the show notes. I was throwing this in here for a joke, and of course, there's nobody here to talk about the joke but me. So if I laugh through it, I'm sorry. But anyway, I titled this "No Judgment Butt Plug." So in my search for butt, which is what I'm using to broadcast this Icecast stream out to you guys live, which is called Broadcast Using This Tool, B-U-T-T, I came across another project that seemed to have fit into this segment here, and it's called Buttplug. Buttplug is an open source standards and software project for controlling intimate hardware, including sex toys, I will say a badgering machine, electro stim hardware, and more. It features implementations in C#, JavaScript, and other programming languages. It's support for popular hardware brands such as Kiru, LoveSense, Aero, Steck, and more. Can support Bluetooth, USB serial, audio controlled toys. It has some cross-platform library available for desktop and mobile, because you never know, you really want to be unplugged when you're plugged in. And open source with a permissive license, BSD 3 clause. So, yeah. So if that open source project turns you on, go check it out. It it was just something random that I ran into. And hey, it was open source, so why not put it into the show notes? So there you go. And let me catch up with the chat room here. I am reading, just trying to see, Half-Life, Half-Life 1, Half-Life 2. Yeah, most of the Half-Life games are available, and I think they're already Linux running. I know, because I play Source and all those games. all of those games, for sure. Permissive license, yes. Hitting up those puns, for sure, yes. I'm trying to do my best. Alrighty, so that's enough for open source in that segment. We're going to go ahead and go to our Linux and a Ham Shack segment. And we have a few things here. One was brought to the attention of me. I can't remember. Somebody in the chat room sent this to me earlier. I could scroll back and figure it out. But anyway, the LHS podcast is number 17. Wow. Luke Baker over at Linux Links released a review of Linux podcasts on the first of the month, so this August, and apparently we earned slot number 17. Each podcast was measured against three categories: content, conversational, and engaging. And if you feel we should be higher or lower based on our awesomeness or lack thereof, head on over to their page and drop some comments on them. I was looking at the list, and I'm loading it up right now so I could see it one more time, just to give you an idea of what's above us. Linux Unplugged, Ubuntu Podcast. Yeah, I agree. Linux Action News. Okay, yeah. So here's some of the ones that are after us. The Linux Link Tech Show. Hacker Public Radio. I'm not quite sure that's a Linux only thing, because there's all kinds of random topics. That's just a public forum for people to put out podcasts. Sunday Morning Linux Review is on there, and the Linux Lugcast. I'm not sure, is that even active anymore? Anyway, yeah, so it's an interesting list. I'm not sure how valid it is or how many people were in the review process to check that out. But anyway, it's kind of neat seeing us mentioned in a Linux podcast scene of all the movers and shakers. And that's over on linuxlinks.com. The link is in the show notes, but I'm sure you can find it through your favorite search engine. Okay, let me get back to my notes here. Where was I? Okay, so we got a couple other things here. Yes, Klog. Klog releases version 0.941, and this was just a quick patch fix to their previous 0.94 release. And on the 1804 build of Ubuntu, which the LHS podcast builds are based on, you have the version 0.429. So, or is that right? Did I get that right? Oh my God. 9.4.1.0. It must be, they must be running a different version series on this. Hold on. Yes. Klog version here is about 0.929. Okay. Yeah. I did miskey it. So the version that is installed on the 1804 repo is 0.929. What Klog is it's a multi-platform free ham radio logger. It's the only one able to run in Linux, Windows, and Mac OS, so this is completely cross-platform compatible. Klog is providing a QSO management, useful QSL management, a DX cluster client, DX CC management, club log integration, WSJTX integration, DX Marathon support, and much more. The latest release helps support WSJTX, and that's kind of why I mentioned the whole version number thing, because 0.929 does not. They put out this release specifically to address WSJTX support. And let's see, here's some of the features that are currently in some of these releases here that we don't have access to. The WSJTX support to receive log QSO and real-time data. Synchronize RX frequency with the satellite downlink combo box. The focus is back to search line edit when the right click on the list found. Wow, this is terrible English on their on their website. Anyway, so a lot of stuff was changed and fixed. Looks like several bugs here when adding a QSO. The QSL is marked as received. Klog showed an SQL error and table QSL via needed to be renamed. And some DXCC statuses were not properly calculated. So there's currently no one maintaining a PPA build for this. And so in order to get the latest version on your system, you are going to have to hit the old console and compile. So yeah, let's see here. Yeah, Don KB2YSI is saying that he's been using it for the last year or so. And that's probably because it does have really good satellite support. I did take a look at that. I did find some old satellites in there, which I'm sure you can probably disable. And you can also program satellites that are not already in the list. And I also noticed a few times switching between satellites that if it didn't quite switch properly, like I just switched to Oscar 20, you know, it shows me the frequencies at 145 megahertz and 2 meters and downlinks at 435. But like the bands is showing 160 meters as the uplink and 70 centimeters as a downlink. So some still a little quirkiness and stuff like that to look at, but it looks like it's a pretty cool little logging program. It's definitely written in Qt. So that's why it's, at least the UI is in Qt. So definitely cross-platform with that. I haven't looked at the code itself, and I was going to get to it today, but I just ran out of time. So, yeah, I'm just going to leave it there and check out K-Log. And if you like it and you want some of the other features, start looking to compile it. And it shouldn't be that tough. It should compile pretty clean and easy. And in fact, I'll go ahead and compile it. And if I run into any problems, I'll go ahead and add the notes to the show notes here. Let's see. The last thing I have here came from Surge, Oscar November 4 Alpha Alpha. He stopped by the chat room to tell us about a write-up he did on RIDI contesting in Linux using Wine and Wine or WinTest on his website, hamwaves.com. Yeah, on there he has other topics, including a manual for getting the Mini VNA Pro working on USB and Bluetooth, among other things, and various resources, including a link to the podcast here. Thanks, Serge, for reminding me of your great resource. I know I've definitely seen his site before when I was trying to set up some other logging applications with Wine, and he's covered them before. And yeah, it's well documented, and the links are all there. And he has a bunch of other resources too, if you just go down to the root of his webpage. But he has a lot of Linux and ham resources all kind of compiled together. So check that out. So let's see here. Yeah, PyQSO is another logger. There is a PPA out for that. Oh, I haven't tried that beyond just starting it. Just reading back here in the chat room. So let's go ahead and acknowledge everyone in the chat room. I'm just typing them down as I see them. So we have Don KC9ZMY is here. Dave KB0OWD is here. Jim VE5EV is not listening to us, but he's slowly trying to catch up in the podcast, but he's definitely here in the chat room. And we have Don, KB2YSI. I'm just seeing if anybody else has said anything. Okay, so let's see here. Social media roundup. I'm just going to go over the Patreons and subscriptions. I did not go looking for new likes on Facebook and stuff like that. That was a bit out of my normal normal task. So I didn't want to go diving into social media channels there for that information. But let's go ahead and recognize our Patreons. We have William Heckelman, John Spriggs, Steve Sainer, Donald Gover, Robert Pitts, Paul Griffith, Jonas Rulio, John Zaruba Jr., Samuel Vimes, Steve Metcalf, Chris Beggio, and Darren King. And over in our subscriptions, we have Steve Heppier, Jeff Zimmerman, Michael Jopling, Steve Nichols, Todd Bowers, Thor Wegman, Stephen Harp, Charlie Brown, Kevin Murray, Wayne Carpenter, Doug Reeder, Bill Piotr, Dylan Engel, Alan Wilson, John Clark, Michael Aiello, Robert Halliday, Brian Smith, Johnny Kinsey, Ronald Ikey, Robert Yerke, Michael Connolly, and Jeremy Hall. And do we have anything else from our chat room? I'm sorry, I'm not as entertaining as the three of us together. I know we all miss Russ and Cheryl. Well, at least I do. I'm not used to having to talk so much. So I'm just waiting here for the chat room delay to go out. And I see Dan finally got into the chat room. KB6NU must have figured out how to register his nick. I'm sorry about that, KB6NU. So about 2 weeks ago, we had a problem with spammers just constantly spamming the channel here. Not just our channel, but every channel with any activity across the Freenode network. And it just sort of got out of hand. And at that point, the decision was made to click on the forced registration flag, which basically means that your nick has to be registered with nick services and you have to be authenticated in order to join the channel. This is very similar to the pound ham radio channel. So they are set up exactly the same way, and several other channels are done exactly the same way. And it does limit the spam. We didn't get a single spam after that. Hopefully we'll get to a point where we can turn that back off and we won't have to deal with it. But I haven't been back on another channel to see to see where that particular spam attack is at. So, without hearing anything else, I know there's a lots of other things going on in amateur radio and open source right now, but these are the topics I chose to cover tonight. I would like to thank everyone for listening. This is episode 243, and I'm Annie4RD, Bill, and I bid you all a 73.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Linux in the Ham Shack. LHS is a community-sponsored podcast. Our website is located at lhspodcast.info. You can support the program by visiting the LHS Patreon page of patreon.com/LHSpodcast or using the contribute link on the website. Get in touch via social media. The show has a presence on Google+, Facebook, Twitter, Discord, and YouTube. Or you can drop an email to info@lhspodcast.info or record a voicemail at 1-909-LHS-SHOW. That's 1-909-547-7469. Visit the IRC channel, LHS Podcast, on the Freenode IRC network. Also visit the online merchandise store at shop.lhspodcast.info for fun and fashionable LHS merchandise. Become an ambassador and represent LHS at a Linux convention or hamfest. Email ambassadors@lhspodcast.info or visit the website for details. The podcast is recorded live every Monday night at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time. Connect to the stream at stream.blacksparrowmedia.net:8008/LHS live. Until next time, over and out. In the Ham Shack and the Linux in the Ham Shack logo are released under a Creative Commons Attribute Non-Commercial No Derivatives 4.0 International License.